Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Ha! I take my shirt off. Work all day, hustle and pray. Got nowhere to go. Got to catch my sugar. My plantation sugar. My plantation sugar. My plantation sugar. Ah. Plantain,
ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Shirtless Plantain Show, the weekend review edition. Hope you're all well. This is your host, Dean. And as always, I am here with the one, the only, the fasting, the hungry, the well-fed, the well-rested, Coach. What it do, Coach?
Yeah, I'm definitely well-fed. Broken my fast now. But yeah, we're almost exactly halfway through now at this point, which is cool. It's nice. Anybody that's observing it, even if you're not Muslim, I hope you guys are keeping well and just, you know, being good to yourself and others around you, man.
Yeah, he said he hopes you're eating good. And that's a generous man right there. He didn't have to say that right now, but he said that for y'all. In any event, Coach, it's an international break, so we've been a little spotty with our schedule keeping. But people haven't missed out too much. The soccer show's been popping. Mitch and Cole have been going crazy on that. Yeah. We have a surprise coming very soon. Yeah, we're excited. You guys will be very excited as well. But that's all we'll say about it for now. But just give us about another
Wait. I shouldn't be saying this on the pod, but did they come in?
No, they didn't come in to my knowledge, but it's a go regardless. It's a go.
Okay, cool.
It is what it is. Okay, people, this is how we plan literally everything surrounding this show. Like sometime on the pod, you just realize that we forgot something, then we do it or we don't do it. Okay. In any event. Wait for next week. We're very excited. You guys will be excited too. Coach, it's international break, so we should start with international games, I think, this week. Morocco, all that infrastructure that led them to finishing third at the World Cup last time, seems like they're putting it to good use because apparently they hosted a bunch of the other African countries and well, sort of like a mini non-tournament, but just a bunch of friendlies at the complexes. And one of those games happens to be Nigeria playing against Ghana, hosted by Morocco. I love Pan-Africanism. This is what Muammar Gaddafi died for.
This is cool. It's good stuff. And I'll be honest, I don't, you know, I'm not saying it to slight any other nation, namely my own, but they're setting a good example. They are. Like, they really are. You know, it's just from a footballing perspective, purely from footballing perspective, they're setting a good example of, you know, they're hosting the AFCON in a couple of years' time. This is how you start working out all the kinks. You start having dry runs of everything like that. This is a perfect opportunity for them. They clearly have people that know what they're doing. You know, they haven't hosted the AFCON in God knows how many years. What a better way to start learning about, you know, logistics and stuff during international breaks, using that as an opportunity to say, okay, everybody come over and we'll host you. I think it's a great idea, man. And Nigeria beating Ghana is always great. So yeah.
Absolutely. Finidi George, one of our favorite players ever, a member of the Golden Generation. This would make him about the fifth Golden Generation player that's coached the national team at this point, I think.
Olise. Amokachi.
Is that Amokachi? Siasia.
Yes.
I don't know. I think Siasia.
Kessie, is he golden generation? He's probably.
Yeah, he's part of that generation too.
Yeah.
He was the OG of that generation.
Yeah. God rest
his soul. Yeah, we got about five, you know, like in various coaching capacities and whatnot.
Yeah.
In any event, did you have any expectations? I was just happy that the Portuguese dude that played all that terrorist football that almost won us the Nations Cup on accident. I'm just glad he's not there anymore. Because I'll be honest with you, like, it's of course I want to win AFCON. But that was so against our cultural heritage.
It was fun. It was fun to see people rattled at the fact that Nigeria are shithousing their way to a fan. That was great.
That was great. On the low, when we lost, it was like, it's kind of like when Holland lost to Spain in the World Cup final in 2010 in South Africa. It was like, you know, we were watching Spain. We're like, Spain is playing like Holland and Holland are playing like Germany. Like, what's going on here? You know, so it made sense that they would lose. And also, we played against the hosts, and that has its own complications, but I'm over that, I think. but any expectations from the game? What were you hoping for? I watched most of it. It was a good watch.
Yeah, to be honest, I was just curious to see who, like, what Finidi George would do with the players that he selected, because, you know, Osimhen wasn't there. You know, he started Dessers, Bassi was on the bench. I don't even think he came on in the end, actually. So it was actually quite a rejigged team. And I was pleasantly surprised. I think within the first 5 minutes, I was like, okay, the ball is coming out from the back. And we're fortunate to have a goalkeeper who is actually reasonably decent with his feet. Like, I think that's an underrated thing that people that haven't realized. He's actually quite good with his feet. And the ball kept on coming out from him, working through midfield. It will be, you know, coming short, you know, trying to drive the team forward. It was very, very good to see. Now, I think it's a good blueprint for any coach that's coming in. Basically, he's seen that these players are capable of it, and I was really happy with that.
What'd you make of Ghana?
To be honest, same thing, really. Ghana are Ghana are in a very strange place. when I say strange, I mean bad. they're still calling up the IU brothers, never a good thing. But at the same time, you know, the likes of Kudus, the fellow at Bournemouth, I've forgotten his name, Semenyo, like, there's talent there. There's obvious talent there. I forgot the name of the young defender as well. Oh, my gosh. But he's really good. And they came up pretty much with the same philosophy. We're just going to pass the ball. And I think what helped is the fact that the grass was actually well cut. It was a good surface for once.
I gotta say, I was impressed by both teams as well. Ghana had some really beautiful passages of play, but they just couldn't make the final action count. I know they got a consolation goal in the end. At that point, I stopped watching because I'd seen everything I needed to see. They did get a red card pretty early in the second half, but I thought Nigeria were well worth the victory. I think Nigeria was the overall better team, but when Ghana had the ball in their moments, it looked very good. It looked like how I always remembered games between those countries being. You know, like very, very technically based, not a whole lot of long ball, you know, trying to play through each other, defeat each other, you know, play football. Like,
because a lot of ego.
We're West African. Aesthetics matter to us. Aesthetics matter a lot. So that terrorist ball, you know, it scarred my soul. I didn't like it, coach. I did not like it.
I'm with you. And I think the best way I can describe it is ego. I think, like, they recognize what they are in terms of their nations and the history of it. And a lot of it's to do with the fact that they believe that they're better than everybody else, and they have to show it one way or the other, basically. And you know, I'm not going to say it, because football, you know, there's more than one way to skin a cat, but, you know, being a coward, you know, taking a coward's way out of just playing percentage football, I don't feel like that's the West African way, at least anyway. It was good. It was a good friendly in general. It was more friendlies like that, basically, is what I'm saying, not the drip drab bullshit that we get most of the time. So yeah, happy with that.
Yeah, we had a lot of glamour friendlies during this international break, because the next one we're going to talk about is France versus Germany. This right here is one of those fixtures, man. Whether it's a friendly tournament game, it's just something you want to see, especially when the kits look like they're supposed to look, which they haven't for a while, due to a combination of, I think, FIFA and UEFA regulations about jersey colors and what you can put on the back of a kit and how big the look. Basically, the designers got a little too cute with shit, but they just went back to basics recently, both Adidas and Nike, because we've had all the new jerseys recently for everybody, really. We might talk about that a little bit in the show.
Yeah,
however,
game looked good. The grass was green. The French shirts were blue. Their shirts were white. The socks were red. Mbappe was the captain. Germany had a white shirt with black shorts and white socks. Everything was perfect. Then Germany started playing, and I was like, oh, wow. Where have you guys been? It's been a while.
They don't look like a German team, though. I'll be honest with you, they don't. And it's not a dig. I think it's good. The only person I can imagine not being happy with that is probably Michael Ballack. Let me be real. This isn't his Germany. This is not the Germany that he recognizes. If we're being honest, out of all the midfielders on show, I think Toni Kroos is probably the only one that he has some sort of respect for, because let's be honest, Toni Kroos is a German, is as German as it gets when it comes to midfielders. The rest of them are not.
You know, he definitely has the mentality of a German player, but Toni Kroos, and no one has ever called him lazy. He gets through the work.
Yeah.
But there's just something so graceful about the way he plays that he doesn't really scan as a German midfielder.
Okay, so
Toni Kroos has always felt more like a Spanish midfielder than a German midfielder.
Okay, I get what you're saying, but the key thing here is that how many Spanish midfielders genuinely of his that are built like Toni Kroos that have played essentially 6, 10, 8, and 10 basically in the manner that Kroos has. Kroos is very what's the word for? He's so calculated to the point where it almost kind of feels robotic. Spanish midfielders don't really have that quality, and it's not a slight on them. It's more about I've worked.
This is more of an aesthetic thing.
Honestly,
when you think about it, okay, who does he have more in common with? Toni Kroos. If you had to come, if there was a scale, and the scale was Xavi on one end, and Modric on the other end, which one is Toni Kroos closer to on that scale for you?
Do you know what I was gonna say? I feel like you've backed me in a corner, because I feel like Xavi and Modric,
I have.
Xavi and Modric are actually relatively similar in a sense. They both are incredible movers. They're always in space. Always in space. But yeah. Maybe Xavi. But I don't feel like Xavi's ever really excelled as a number 10, whereas Toni Kroos has, especially in these final few seasons at Bayern Munich. He really excelled as a 10, I think. But is what is it? I think we're just splitting heads. But yeah, look, Germany, this German team, are we looking at a new dawn in terms of they found their striker? And do they have to thank Sir Mikel Arteta for that?
I don't know how I feel about that. I think as much as I enjoy what Kyle Havertz is doing, as much as it feels as if he's in a very good moment and he's been unlocked, I don't think he's ever going to be a striker in the way that people hope or maybe want him to be. Like, he's always going to be more of a 9.5 type player than a 9. Yeah. Like, there's just too much. He gives you too much outside of the box for him to be your striker. That's the issue with him as a player. But can you win a tournament with a striker like that? I would argue you're more likely to win a tournament with a striker like that. He's Giroud on steroids, essentially, at this point. You know, Giroud that gives you more outside the box.
Yeah, I think
you know, so that's, I mean, I like this Germany lineup. Kroos returning after a 3-year absence has basically just crystallized everybody's roles. They got left back in Mittelstadt from Stuttgart. Kroos back after 3 years. Havertz up front, not playing left back. I think it's all very clear. I think I would like them to continue with Ter Stegen. I think he's the better performer at this point after Neuer's injury, but sometimes you got to play senior man stuff. As long as Neuer is playing in the team, he can't be on the bench. You know, you either call him up and start him, or you don't call him up at all. That's how that works. You know, and he's probably the captain too. Maybe, I think.
Yeah. If it's not him, it's absolutely Kroos. But I'd probably go with Neuer.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But what you make of France? People are criticizing them because, you know, Germany looked way better than we all expected.
Mm-hmm.
Just given the talent and the history of this fixture over time and how Germany have been, but I only saw the highlights. I didn't watch a full game, coach. I thought France created, especially after the very, very early goal.
Yeah,
But I thought France responded to that quite well, even if they didn't create clear chances.
Yeah, but I think the key thing here is that if you look at the profiles of what both teams set up with, you had Wirtz, Musiala, and Gundogan ahead of Kroos and Andrić, right? Mm-hmm. And you compare the actual pure 4-3-3, if you like, from France, Zaire, Emery, Tchouameni, and Rabiot. In that midfield there, the most creative player is Zaire Emery, right? That's not even up for debate. Clearly is the most creative player there, right? Whereas if you look at Germany, starting with Kroos, then you have Gundogan, then you have Wirtz and Musiala, who are all players who excel through the middle of the pitch, kind of thing. Like, I feel like that's where most of the criticism I read was coming from, the fact that France do have an abundance of talent. And, you know, you're looking at the likes of, I don't know, Camavinga obviously isn't super duper creative, but he's incredibly dynamic. You know, there's no reason why he shouldn't have started this game, I don't think, unless he was carrying an injury. Just to see what the future France midfield is, Emery, Tchouameni and Camavinga, I think. Unless I've forgotten somebody, I don't think I have. But I feel like that's probably
that makes sense if it's Deschamps as a coach, yeah, or someone like him taking the job after him.
Yeah.
But I do feel as if in the long run, they're going to want a little more creativity in there. Yeah. Unless one of those guys develops into a final pass merchant, there's not enough.
Yeah, but then you look at the attacking options, it's almost like, well, who cares? It's tournament football anyway. Like, the attackers are going to get chances. They're too good not to get chances. But I understand some of the criticism. But here's the interesting thing. Germany brought on Undav, Muller and Füllkrug off the bench. There isn't an actual striking / attacking problem with Germany, considering that both Sané and Gnabry weren't in the squad. So
it's funny how quickly the game changes, man. The game just changes. Like, I think this time last year we would have said Germany needs a striker. Now that sounds stupid. And really a lot of it is just the vibes. You know, they're about to host this tournament, the Euros, in the summer. They have a young coach that is probably too good and too young to be coaching the national team at the moment, but he just happens to be there because that's the way life and contracts work. I mean, I think Germany can do it, man. I think they can do it. Like, one game isn't enough to do anything, but I don't know. Like, we've kind of talked around the main point of this game. Like, yes, there was a football match played, and yes, Florian Wirtz scored a great goal, and yes, Musiala looked great and assisted Havertz for the second goal. But coach, Germany are leaving Adidas, bro. France already did it years ago when we thought that wouldn't happen. Now Germany, what is going on, coach? Do we want to live in this world where Nike is out kidding Germany? What the fuck is going on? Who should we call? Nigel Farage? Somebody help me.
So I don't know if you guys know this, you guys might not know this, but I'm always the butt of the jokes because I'm a checks over stripes guy. I always have been. And these guys hate me for it, right? But even I feel I haven't been right the last 3 or 4 days. Every time I remember that Nike will be out for in Germany, I just think there hasn't been a point in my entire life where Adidas have not been the kit sponsor of Germany, guys. It's disgusting. It's gross. And I feel like it's symbolic of where the world is going, where money rules over everything. What happened to tradition and men being men, you know, men going up, climbing up buildings and cleaning windows without any safety gear. Yeah. What happened to men just dying at work randomly because, you know, the correct procedures weren't followed? What happened to that? We're losing all of that, guys. Like, wake up. Wake the fuck up.
Fucking workplace safety violations, man. They made us great. They made us great. They made Germany, Germany. I mean, that would be like, you know, Germany wearing Nike is a bit like making Mercedes in America. Oh, wait, we already fucking do that. It's all fucked. We move on. And one word on France before we do move on. I wouldn't read much into this result. I thought they played well enough, if not well. And in any tournament, just based on the talent alone, doesn't really matter how you put it together. It's hard to fuck it up, like you said earlier, coach. You know? So they'll probably sort it out. England hosted Brazil at Wembley in what is definitely a glamour and heritage friendly. As far as English people are concerned, the glamour and heritage friendly of the round, I would say. It was France, Germany for me personally, but whatever. Yeah. Endrick scored a late winner in the 80th minute. What do you make of him, coach?
I think he's the biggest industry plant since Drake. I'll be honest with you. My spirit, my spirit doesn't take to him. It just doesn't. I don't know, there's something about him. And it's weird me hating on a 17-year-old, but trust me, Moose knows. Like, coach knows, you know. joke aside, I think the talent is obviously there. I think he's built as well. He's already pretty much a grown man, and he's still probably going to end up filling out about 6'1" or 6'2" or something like that, I think. But
I think it's going to be a short one. I think it's a short guy. So? I don't think it's going to matter, but I think he's a short guy. I think he's more of the Aguero type than tall guy.
Yeah. I mean, there's already been comparisons to Romario, sorry, which I totally get. I totally understand. But yeah, the boy is a plant, man. Like, everything that seems like, look at his hair and shit. Do you know what I mean? And his comments after the game today. Oh yeah, you know, Bobby Charlton did not play there. You wasn't even alive when the old Wembley, right, was still standing, right? You've only been alive long enough to see the new Wembley. Yeah, that's it. So no, Bobby Charlton did not play there. So he was obviously fed that by the man, right? The man fed him his lines in his little earpiece, because yeah, that's
the
bullshit.
The algorithm, really. The algorithm. Yeah. I think we need to get used to this, coach. Like, a lot of these young sports prodigies, you know, because there's so much information available, like, the whole path is planned out. They know what to say. They know what to do. They know how to optimize this. They're sleeping at this age. They're doing these special stretches. Like, same thing with, like, Wemby. Like, the first time I heard him interviewed in his second language, by the way, because he's French.
The boy
sounds wiser than me, and I'm like, three times his age. Like he just sounds so sage-like. He sounds like Yoda, and he was like 19 at the time. He clearly has a plan for how his life is going to work and how he plans to deploy his talents. And I think we're just going to see more of that, because you'd kind of be stupid not to take advantage of all the information and resources available to you in this era of sports, you know? So yeah, he's just following the steps. I'm sure he woke up that morning like, okay, and now I square at Wembley and start burnishing my reputation before I give Real Madrid my next 7 years. Then I go play the next 7 years at Manchester United and bring them back to greatness. Or like that.
I will say this though. There's looking at both lineups between England and Brazil yesterday, right? There's no doubt in my mind. Brazil definitely had the more technical lineup. You know, the likes of Paqueta, Rodrigo arguably might have been the best technician on the pitch yesterday. I don't know. I think he's stupendously good. Like, it's almost disrespectful the fact that I won't speak about him for too long, because but I think if you're looking at both teams, right, the chasm that used to be between England and Brazil in terms of technicality has been closed dramatically. Like, really and truly, it's been, and it's not because Brazil have got any worse, even though they slightly have. England are just really, really good. If we go through the team, like Stones, Chilwell, Rice, Bellingham, Foden, Watkins, these are all really good technicians. And this is not even anywhere near to me England's best team that they put out yet. You look at Rashford coming off the bench, Mainoo coming off the bench, you know, Maddison didn't even make it off the bench. Like, Lewis Dunk, obviously, he didn't have the best of games, but again, he plays out the back for Brighton, you know, in that Brighton system. These are all really good technicians. I'm really hopeful that more of these players are produced for England, and we're phasing out the likes of Conor Gallagher, because he makes me sick. I have to be really clear here. I'm not hating on him. I hope he has a good career and stuff, but there's no way a team can be as successful as what England want to be and have someone like him as a mainstay. It's just nasty business, man. It's just really nasty business. Got all the energy in the world, and he just looks out of place.
Yeah, because his main quality, like Jordan Henderson before him, is that energy. Yeah. And the way you make that quality show is by being energetic and moving around too fucking much.
Yeah.
He's always fucking chasing something and leaving gaps.
Yeah.
And that's why I would never, like, I actually like him as a player, just not for elite teams or teams that are planning to win things. Like,
he's, no, man.
Crystal Palace was his proper station, I think.
Yeah.
You know, for and sure, that's with all disrespect to Chelsea, because they're not better than Crystal Palace. So, let's be clear about that.
But yeah, I think I'm pretty content with, you know, I'm by no means an England fan. I'm pretty content with the showing that England put out yesterday in general. They competed, and look, there was a time when Brazil would put out a team, and I'd argue that potentially only, and I mean only, Wayne Rooney would get a look in into that first 11, basically. And now it's really not the case. England have a lot of players. For example, there's no version of Bruno Guimarães that's ever as good as Declan Rice, and he plays a lot of games for Brazil. He starts pretty much every Brazil game. Like,
you know what though, I do think at least the version of him that we've been watching at Newcastle has been, and you know, I'm no Bruno Guimarães, so I'm an Arsenal fan, and he's done some shit to annoy me in the last couple of seasons. But I gotta say, I don't think he's been deployed properly at that club. They mostly play him as a six when he's really an eight.
And that
has affected, you know, sort of his effect. Like, I think he'd look more like Paqueta looks at West Ham when he's playing well. Not that he's the same kind of player, but I just think there, and Declan Rice is the better player. I want to be clear on that as well, but I just think there's much more to that player than we're giving him credit for.
But then if we're using Declan Rice as one, Declan Rice has already excelled as a six and an eight just this season alone. So
that's fair.
Yeah, look, Guimarães, Paqueta, Rafinha, and I put Rafinha in quotes, by the way, Rodrigo, Vinicius, bro, like, that's an insane amount of technical quality there. And they're not even, you know, you're missing the likes of Neymar's probably done, actually, if I'm being honest.
If they are being serious, he better fucking be done.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, look, there's a lot of talent in this Brazil side that we haven't really even seen. Look, Gabriel didn't even make it there. Martinelli didn't even make it there. They're both injured, obviously. But there is some sort of resurgence for Brazil, and I think, you know, Brazil fans should be excited for sure.
Well, let's get to the real issue, Coach. Yeah. This flag on the back of the collar. I'm kidding. Gareth Southgate. Like, I just want to put it up front to not make this any more dramatic than it needs to be. He's not fucking getting fired before the tournament.
Yeah.
However, he has been strongly linked to Manchester United in the last week, and it wasn't dismissed out of hand by certain sources that you would expect to just dismiss this. Do you think that's an actual possibility? You think United would actually hire Gareth Southgate?
Well, listen to the way Sir Jim Ratcliffe has spoke, kind of thing. I don't rule out anything. I don't, in regards to Southgate, I really don't rule out anything. It's clear.
Well, he really rates Arteta.
Yeah.
So you think that would mean he's smart? But
yeah. But you have to, the way I see it is, you know, not only just him, but a few other like Man United involved people have spoken about the fact that the likes of Declan Rice should be a United player, Harry Kane should be a United player, and stuff like that. And he's obviously said similar things as well. And I feel like if United have been at their best when they've always had the best of English talent, basically. And I feel like Sir Jim Ratcliffe recognizes that, and I feel like he almost looks at Gareth Southgate as a conduit for that. If the ex-England manager who is overseeing this golden generation of England players again is now a Man United player, if they ever step into the transfer market, it's like, oh, do I want to play for Gareth Southgate again? Especially the best times England have had in a lot of these people's lifetime has come under Southgate's stewardship. They might be trying to leverage that.
I see the logic behind that, but I think it's so misguided as to be stupid.
Yeah,
like,
of course.
No fucking way. Like, these players, people like, for example, let's say Ben White.
Yeah.
He's well aware that Southgate and that outfit, as good as they've been, that is not the standard.
No, these man. People, yeah,
these guys play for the best managers in the world. These guys play for Pep, Klopp, Arteta.
Yeah.
They know. They know that Southgate is just a nice guy that makes it okay to be at England camp instead of the press fucking monstering you guys the whole time you're there. Yeah. That's literally it. This man, he can't even make a sub to change a game, bro.
No.
Like, what are we talking about here, man? I hope they hire him.
I had this conversation with all people, my missus, the other day, and she was just like, so why didn't you like so much? I was like, one of the first football memories I have is him missing that penalty. So, yeah, I've hated him pretty much my whole life. But joke aside, no, like, he had a good career as a footballer, whatever, but keeping a buck, compared to his peers, he was a career loser. Like, and he, like, that's just, you know, it's not, I'm not even saying it in a harsh way, but he was a career loser. Like, if you want to compare him to someone like Tony Adams or something, like, he cannot even, he wouldn't, he shouldn't even be allowed to walk on the same street as Tony Adams. Like, there, the disparity is that high. But these are the kind of people he was playing around. And the fact that he's made it to England coach, it's fine. It is what it is. But you have to, I genuinely do believe, as an international manager, you have to have some sort of clout that you've gained. Like,
you need to be able to walk in the room and put your dick on the table.
Basically. Yeah, because international
football. Here are my medals.
Yeah, like basically,
like Deschamps, here are my medals.
This is what I'm saying. Look, in international football, you're calling up the best of the best. So it's egos. It's egos mm-hmm. everywhere. Like, all due respect, yeah, Phil Foden 3 years ago had a better career than Southgate could ever hope to imagine. And Phil Foden
as a player and manager combined.
Do you know what I mean? So it just feels as if he's almost like the son that the son-in-law basically that you want your daughter to marry kind of thing, but he's not really the guy. Like, he's just been the guy to kind of keep things steady for England. And yeah, they've done well, but England haven't really excited or done anything. Look, they went 1-0 up against Italy at home in the Euros and didn't have a shot on target again for the whole game. Like, that is Gareth Southgate. That is Gareth Southgate in a nutshell. That is who he is. And if he brings that to United, that's fantastic, to be honest. I wouldn't even lie. So
he's literally the coaching equivalent of a fucking sentient condom. He's just there. He's just there. Like, nobody likes him. He's just there protecting and keeping things calm. And honestly, I used to think that his man management, which I still think is his best quality, mm-hmm. I think it can't be understated how important it had been for the England program to have a manager that is a thoughtful man, that is an empathetic man. But with the whole Ben White fiasco, I'm kind of shaky on that at the moment. But, you know, it's one guy out of many, so I'll let it go. But he's not getting fired. He's also not winning shit. So you can yell as much as you want on Twitter, but ain't shit happening. What do you make of Brazil? Like, they're in a transition period. How do you feel about them moving forward, provided there's no Neymar in the way again?
Look, can Endrick be the striker? I certainly hope so, because it's definitely not Richarlison. But if we're going through through the center of the pitch, at center back and in midfield and in attack, Brazil look better than they did. They used to call up Fred, guys. Like, not that Fred, the other Fred that used to play for Leon. Yeah, like, so.
The right center.
So yeah, like, Brazil are definitely moving in the right direction, and I feel like it's good that their brightest attackers are all going to be playing for the same club. Shit like that matters. Like,
yeah, and the last point on this Brazil England game, which I guess ultimately because there was one goal in it that happens to be a rebound, it was entertaining in that both teams were very technically good, but not much else. Mm-hmm. Is it weird to you, like it is to me, that Vinicius loves Declan Rice so much?
Well, no, because good players love good players, man. Like, there's always everyone that's played the game, right, at whatever level it is, right, you tend to get on with players that are good. Like, if you're good, you get on with other players that are good. Like, that's just the bottom line. There's no science behind it. I can't explain it. But
it's the language of football.
Really. Yeah, it's the language of football. Oh, he gets me. Do you know what I mean? Oh, I get him. And then that's it. Like, you know, like that famous meme, you know, I see you, you get female attention. I too also get female attention. I'm trying to say it in the most PG way, but you catch my drift. That's all it is.
Yes. All right, let's do the last of our glamour friendlies before we move on to some other stuff. Spain and Colombia went at it at West Ham Stadium in London here. Well, not here, there.
Yeah, and, I didn't go.
Well, the highlight for me was watching Luis Diaz's dad in the stands. That man is a character. He was dancing, he was doing the lambada and all that shit. Some woman came out the crowd.
He might be the most annoying man literally in the world, and I think it makes sense why the kidnappers just gave him back in the end, for real, because he's allowed. Look, I can imagine, like, on a night out for the first couple of hours he's great, and then after that, when everybody's ready to go home, he's literally there talking about, yeah guys, what's the next move, and it's 4 a.m and you got to get back to your wife and kids. You know, he's talking about, yeah, we're going to the next club. Oh no, we're gonna go get some gonna go get some takeout, and then we're gonna do whatever. We're gonna like, shoot some.
What kind of ist would it be if I started saying stuff about cocaine right now?
Well.
All right, let's move on. Then. Let's move on. As for the game, the goal was fucking tremendous.
This is what you talk about tearing someone's nyash. because even I was looking for the ball. I was like, what the fuck is this ball gone, bro?
The way he slapped that ball, man. Wow. Yeah. Like, what a finish. Yeah. Like, all I could think was that I don't want to fall down. Like, if I fall down, it might be hard for me to get up at this age. And that man flew in the air. And I don't even know what that was, really. Beautiful finish, though.
It was just a tremendous finish. But, yeah, I think the highlight of that was wingers need to be doing that more often. And I know the game doesn't allow for as much space, but we need more 1v1 specialists, man, that are just going to tear their markers pant like that. But, yeah, David Raya finally got subbed off at halftime. So maybe Arteta was spitting.
Yeah, man. I mean, I was watching him in some of their training clips, and I mean, I knew he was nice with the feet, but good Lord, like he is extra. I can see where, I mean, like, see, people, and this goes to Arsenal fans or just football fans in general, like people within the game, at least at the very elite level of the games, at clubs that are doing well, they know much more about what we're seeing every week than we do, because they're actually in the industry. Like, as much as I've heard about David Raya, when I actually got to see him in a Rondo with other Spanish players, my respect for him jumped another like 30%. Mm-hmm. Like, he was as good as anybody there. He's a better technician with the ball at his feet than Aymeric Laporte. I'm not kidding, bro. Yeah. In any event, I'm glad they subbed him up at half. Got to keep our guys safe for the important stuff that's happening this season.
Yeah.
Let's do some, it's an international break. So naturally there were a lot of interesting withdrawals, if you will. Bukayo Saka got sent home from England. That made me happy.
For sure.
I didn't know he was carrying. I thought he was carrying like an Achilles thing, but they're saying it was like a muscle thing.
Muscular thing. Well, from my understanding, that's not the only injury, but there's one other injury he's been carrying pretty much what feels like almost a year at this point, and he's just been playing through it. But I think more than anything, it's very clever decision making from Saka. I think Saka always knew he wasn't going to probably play these games, but he just thought, let me just show face at least, and then they'll see for themselves. But yeah, like I'm not mad at players. Like, you know,
is that what he did? Is that what you're calling it? Let me just show face. He went there to sell pepper soup. Okay, he went there to sell his little spice bottles. And once he got his little publicity, he was like, "All right, I'm injured. I'm out." Like, man, that is the most shit ever.
I've had in the last 2 weeks, and don't judge me for this because sometimes it's hard to like cook food when you're fasting and stuff and you're out and about. But I've had Nando's twice this Ramadan, right? And both times I've gone to pick up, I haven't seen the bottle anywhere. Like, I haven't even Honestly, so anybody, any of our London listeners, let me know where like it's at, because I really want to grab some. I'm even getting my missus to be on the hunt, because she lives within like a good three, like not too far from her. So I'm trying to hunt. I'm trying to find that bottle for sure.
Your missus be scanning for Nando's, like she
admits. Yeah, man, literally.
Big Gabby at Arsenal, Gabriel Magalhães, did not travel to Brazil at all. He is carrying some injury. I don't know what that's about, but I imagine he'll be fit for City next week. Kyle Walker left the England game early after chasing Vinicius again. This has happened before. It happened again. Yeah. What did you make of it? I didn't see the actual scene. Did he look badly injured there?
So he just I feel like, you know, when players know, like they know, okay, you know what? I'm not gonna continue today, kind of thing. But then he updated on Instagram talking about he's hoping it's not that bad, we'll be back as soon as he can. When players say that, normally it's almost like famous last words. So, you know, I'm wishing him a speedy recovery, obviously. But you know, if he doesn't know at this point, if you know shit, you can't continue, it's a precaution kind of thing, you know. You have to wait for the scans. But I will say, because of his age as well, I'm not gonna be on the optimistic side for sure. It's just it is what it is, man.
It's it's almost a shame that the big game between Arsenal and City is coming up right after an international break, because I feel like there are a lot of players that would not be at their peak fitness because of this, because they're doing different training regimens from what they're usually used to. Like, I think of someone like Saliba. Every time he comes back from international break, I feel like that first game is a little ropey.
I hope
that doesn't happen this time, but I'm kind of banking on it.
I'm hoping that he doesn't actually play for France at all. I'm hoping that this is just an extended break where he's just...
I mean, I don't think it's the playing that bothers him. It's the fact that he just leaves Arsenal and he seems to be out of rhythm. Because it's not like when he goes to France, he plays for them a bunch anyway. He's still the bench guy there. So I think it's just like leaving London or something. Like, even just like travel fucks that guy up. But
maybe.
I hope I'm wrong this time. You know, we got Haaland, who supposedly is going to be back exactly 10 days from now, which is when the Arsenal game is. Do you think he's making that game?
Yeah. Knowing Pep, absolutely. I know he's got him wrapped him up in the softest cotton wool, in Cambodian cotton wool. Like, he's absolutely not doing anything until probably Wednesday or Thursday at this point, and he's going to be ready and primed for Sunday. That I would not be surprised at all, man. But yeah, he's captain, you know, played, you know, I think the full 90 minutes. So yeah, there's that.
Yeah, and our last injury report member is Cole Palmer. What happened to him?
Boy, I'm not too sure. All I know is that he's not gonna be ready for at least the first game back. That's what I was reading. That it looks pretty bad. And Chelsea are in a bit of a pickle now, because they do have quite a few injuries already, and Cole Palmer is clearly their best player this season. So not only just in terms of performances, but in terms of numbers as well. So losing all of that, not looking good, man. But this is what I hate about the international break in general, because shit like this shit just gets fucked up. Like, players that, you know, I know there's a lot of sports science and, you know, they have all these things like the red zone and stuff and all that, but like, when you step away from the club kind of thing, and then these coaches that you see once every what feels like what every 3 months at this point kind of thing, they don't know the regularity, they don't know, you know, the regular shit. They just get sent a report or something that, oh yeah, this is what the club sent, kind of, but they don't really know you on a day-to-day basis the way the club doctors do, and that can affect recovery, in my opinion. So it's just it's frustrating that this break happens now at this time of the year. Like, I personally think, and this is just my opinion, I really think an international break, anything after January, needs to be scrapped, especially if it's not in a tournament year, in fact, moreover in a tournament year, because the season's going to finish, and what, the players get how long for a break before they have to go off to the international camp? Why not just, I don't know.
10 days.
Yeah, exactly. Why not just have no internationals after January, right? And then when the season ends, the season can actually end a little bit earlier. You can might have a couple warm-up games behind closed doors, whatever, that are not as intensive. But having whole big, international games where players are traveling this way and that way kind of thing, I just feel like it's so selfish and so, it's kind of productive to the actual health at this point. Like, all these players were fit. Remember, all these players were fit going to national break. They all got picked for their teams, and now they're injured. So,
hey, man, if they can't form a union, then maybe they can just do fraud.
Nigerians,
we love it.
Yeah, and I think you know, that's actually a good point. Obviously, all the players we listed, there's way more players that were injured kind of thing, but the likes of Varane, and I can't, you might be able to remind me of the other players that I've spoken, Kevin De Bruyne and Courtois as well, that have spoken up about this schedule and stuff. Do you think they're just all in this one massive group chat and it's like, guys, fuck it, I'm just pulling out of this, like, it's too much, and they all just agree, like, you know, okay, you had it last time, okay, I get to have it this time kind of thing? Because I feel like at this point, that's what they kind of have to do. Let's take matters into their own hands.
That's hilarious. But I wouldn't put it beyond them. But at the same time, I also don't trust a bunch of jocks to be sensible enough to do what they're supposed to do. I mean, they can still fix this anytime they want. They can unionize and just say no. They can strike right before a tournament. They can all just say, we're not playing. Then what? The guys with the money have to listen. They're the product. Yeah. The product should have more power than it has right now. That's all I'm saying. Gosh, the Nottingham Forest, they have violated the Premier League's rules, the profit and sustainability rules, because I think there's a lot of frustration out there with City's 115 charges not getting sorted out, you know. So now that other clubs are getting punished for their indiscretions under these rules, people feel as if the rules are not being applied fairly, but in actuality, these are rules that were created by and agreed to by all the clubs that comprise the Premier League. Like the Premier League is not this separate organization away from the clubs. Obviously, there's an administrative part of it that's separate, but the Premier League is the actual teams. And now we've reached a point where clubs that have been violating are getting punished for those violations. So we already had Everton with a points deduction, which got partially overturned on appeal. So I guess originally they got deducted. I forget the exact numbers, but it got dropped down.
I think it was 10 points or something.
Then it got dropped down for 3 or something?
4 points, something like that, yeah.
Yeah, something like that then. Nottingham Forest have also, based on their combined losses across 3 years, because that's how they do the calculation, it's a rolling 3 years basis for the PSR calculations. And you can only lose so much money. So based on what they could lose in the championship in the last two seasons, no, the last season, plus their two seasons in the Premier League, they're getting fined and docked 4 points by the commission that's adjudicating this. And we have a bunch of their fans wondering if these rules are just in place, you know, because you often hear this in regards to FFP, that the rich teams put it in place to stop smaller teams from coming up or having benefactors. Yeah. And while that may be the practical effect of it, I don't really view it that way. I mean, we all remember Leeds. We all remember that Chelsea only became what they became because they were cheap enough for Roman Abramovich to buy on a discount, basically. Teams seem to go under every week in England. But it's not, they're not the elite team, so most football fans don't really care. So these rules are in place to essentially protect these teams from themselves, and they agree to these rules. So the fact that one crew isn't getting punished doesn't mean that other violators shouldn't get punished. I mean, I don't know. Coach, do you feel differently about this?
No, you guys know exactly how I feel about just clubs doing what they should be doing, and in particularly two clubs, or more really one club. I really fucking hate Chelsea, guys. And you can trace so much of what today's football is back to when that bastard criminal bought that club. There is no City without Chelsea. There is no Portsmouth, I suppose, going under without Chelsea. There is no there's no PSG, if you like, without Chelsea. There's no Newcastle without Chelsea. And
listen, you're right. You're absolutely right. Yeah. But I won't even call this Chelsea defense. This is just an acknowledgement of the world we live in. Yeah. If it wasn't them, it would have been somebody else.
Yeah, it would have been
somebody. If it wasn't Abramovich, it would have been some other oligarch. It was going to happen.
Yeah, and again, I don't want to make it personal to Chelsea per se. It's just, you know, see, like, okay, so here's the thing. Chelsea themselves aren't special, and I don't mean this in a derogatory way, but the club itself aren't special. They don't have, there isn't anything I can link back to Chelsea and be like, even before the moment, be like, oh yeah, Chelsea were this or that, but like, it's just, they're not special. And all this, there's nothing particularly special about their success. It just isn't, because he was going to buy Tottenham originally. It could have easily been the same thing. Tottenham could have easily had, you know, those Premier League titles or whatever. Like, it could have been anybody, right? And the only reason why I say I just hate Chelsea, because Chelsea fans themselves seem to think that they were always going to be this way when they weren't. They simply weren't. They were, you were literally months away from going into administration. I don't think you guys, it's either you guys don't know, which is most likely, and those of you that do know just pretend if it didn't happen. But anyway, the point I'm making is that all of these rules have come into place, in my opinion, 20 years too late. 20 years too late, because as Arsenal fans, we've had to listen to the media create this narrative that X team is more ambitious than Arsenal, and Y team is more ambitious than Arsenal. And none of these teams have spent within their means while building a state-of-the-art stadium and staying in the Champions League all of that time. So many teams have gone up and down, up and down, up and down. Liverpool couldn't even make the Champions League for God knows how many years. And they didn't have a stadium excuse, kind of thing. Arsenal followed all these rules to the letter of the law, so much so that our most expensive signing up until Arshavin was Jose Antonio Reyes for like £12 million or something like that. And then that was in 2004, January 2004. And then we broke the record in 2000, was it? It was January 2008, I believe. January 2009.
Darshavin.
Yeah, for Arshavin. kind of thing. And then after that, guess what it was? Guess me broke it again, guys. It was Ozil. Literally 5 or 6 years later for 42 million. Like, nobody wants to accept that for success to happen the way, I don't want to sound like I'm gatekeeping, but the way it should be, and I put in quotes kind of thing, it's going to take time. It's literally going to take time. So many of these teams, like Chelsea, like City, have literally skipped the actual process and thrown so much money at it that it's completely muddied the waters and fucked the game up. So much so that you can't even look at a decent player in the Premier League and think, I'm going to pay £50 million for him. It's not going to happen anymore. Right. It just isn't. And this has nothing to do with the TV deals. It's just the landscape. The wages alone. Like, it's disgusting what some of these players earn. Not because I'm jealous, but because they're shit. You know? I mean this in a nice way, but let's be honest. Like, there's certain players that they earn all this money. It's like, well, you have to pay them that, because if not, you know, one of these Chelsea's are going to come in and pay them so much more money kind of thing. It's like, it shouldn't be that way. It really shouldn't be that way. I'm not talking about gatekeeping success or anything like that, but the way things should be that they're doing now, it should happen 20 years ago. It really should happen 20. That's the point. That's what's frustrating for me. All these regulations that they're doing now, they've been in the bed of the monster and the devil for God knows how many years, and now they're realizing, oh, do you know what? This probably isn't in the best interest of our game. But guess what? It's too late. It's generally too late.
Yeah, man. We've had to spend the last decade watching City hoover up every fucking trophy, knowing that these motherfuckers cheated. Yeah. they just put in motherfuckers' faces and shit. Now they're punishing all these smaller teams I don't give a fuck about. Like, that was never gonna win shit anyway. Okay. Like, and that's all due respect to Nottingham Forest. I know you motherfuckers won shit with, you know, Brian, whatever the fuck. Not that old. Is it Brian Clough, was it?
Yeah, Brian Clough, yeah.
In any event, Coach, I think we covered as much as we could in this international break. I don't know that there's anything important that we've missed out on. I mean, Argentina was doing some stuff over here in the States, but I don't really care about El Salvador enough to talk about Argentina winning a game without Messi. They'll be playing in Costa Rica on Tuesday. I'll have a friend there. I was supposed to be there, but I just like being home, man. He's cheap inside the house, man. That's inside, bro. Fuck all that. Anyway, Coach, anything else for these people?
Yeah, man, I really fucking hate Chelsea, bro. I mean, you guys made me swear. I cannot believe it. Gosh, man.
Don't worry, you already swore a couple times, like, while you were ranting. Like, I thought it was hilarious. I didn't call you out, though.
Oh, man.
All right, Coach. Other people, peace.
Peace.
Ha! I take my shirt off. Ha! Work all day. Hustle and pray. Where to go, got to catch my sugar, my plantain sugar, my plantain sugar, my plantain sugar, plantain, 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 plantain.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Save big money at Menards. Let the fresh air in and keep the bugs out with replacement screen for your doors and windows from AdForce. It's easy to install, durable against the elements, and comes in a variety of types to suit your needs. Repair your screens today with a roll of replacement screen on sale through May 5th. And check out more great deals happening now in our weekly flyer on Menards.com. Save.